actually 9 talks for this session. I think we need to start on time. And also for each speaker, there will only be 10 minutes. So you know, I think we have to be quick. And you ready? Okay. Okay, let's start the session. Okay, this is the second session for the IXIC. I'm Chi Hu. I'm the co-chair of IXIC. I think I don't go through the housekeeping notes because Philip has already mentioned those. And okay, let's start. Okay, let's get started. Our first speaker is Stephen Bester. And he will talk about exchange point operational experience. 10 minutes only.
Is there a...
Okay, I'll this one? Huh? Okay, Philip said you have 15 minutes.
very kind, thank you. Good afternoon. As we mentioned, Steve Baxter from Pipe Networks. Some of you may have been in the peering booth yesterday where I did some gratuitous self-promotion, so I won't do that today because you've got enough of it yesterday. I'm talking today about the operational experiences that we've had in starting and running Pipe Networks, as well as just a bit of how we do IX operations as well, to give you some sort of context. A little bit about Pipe Networks. We're a company in Australia. We run peering points. It's effectively a distributed peering point model, whereby we sort of take peering to concentrations of ISPs. We've got 14 sites in 6 cities. In each of the cities, it's all connected by our own Metro 10 gig on our own dark fibre. So it's all very good. Lots of content on net. Good, stable, profitable business. If you have any questions at all during this, please don't hesitate to talk. If I'm going too fast for the over there, I'm sorry. That's just me. Okay. How we peer? We're effectively an MLPA exchange. We're a single VLAN type setup. There's lots of off-the-books bilateral peering as well. So it's a single VLAN. We've actually got also ATM access into our peering points with a great partner of our business, PowerTel, provide the ATM access, the ATM accesses into our peering points. We provide the routing for that to occur, and participants can get their own PVC into that. So it slightly breaks the Ethernet model, but it's allowed us to get a great sort of critical mass up early. We use route servers to do the we use route servers for routing updates. We have a centrally managed web-based route entry system, and we automate filter list we automatically generate filter lists on a day-by-day basis. I'm sort of the whole system's built around it. I'm an ex-ISP operator, and ISPs, you know, I used to start it, and we can't resist writing our own billing and operational systems. So the system that runs it was sort of written in-house and has been maintained in-house ever since. Bit of a disclaimer here. Later on, I'll get into a few stories about what some of our customers have done to us and our other customers. I've removed the names to protect the guilty, but I don't mean to pick on anybody in particular. And the reason we can really relay a lot of this information here is because, as a peering point operator, and this might get up bills from PCH's nose, we're a commercial operator. We provide a service, and there's an SLA attached to that service. We have staff who care about our peering. So when something goes wrong, we know about it. We do a lot of preemptive checking. And the people I have looking after this spend all of their time ensuring there are no accidents across our fabric. All right, we're just going to talk about what actually happens at our peering points, the type of routers we use, switching, how we actually do the routing, some other experiences and some suggestions along the way. A lot of this is probably common to a lot of peering points around the world. If it is, I'm not trying to tell you how to suck eggs, but just know exactly what we've done. Funny enough, a lot of people use our peering points for transit avoidance, least cost routing. That might seem obvious, but it probably needs to be stated. We're not as big as Lynx with their 90 gigabits a second, but we do decent peaks into the 1.2 gigabit per second. That's a 7-day average there. In Australian terms, it's very nice. It's quite big. We don't have a lot of spurious sort of on-net peer-to-peer type content that a lot of other sort of Australian-based operators might receive a lot of traffic from. It's all fairly genuine traffic. We have real content.
Before going on, can you explain what that is measuring?
That is measuring the total Ethernet port in and out every port on our exchange point.
Across all of your locations?
Across all of our locations.
Okay.
Transit supply. A lot of customers now actually use pipe as a mechanism to actually source either primary sources of internet access or secondary sources. They do this either via a secondary BGP session across the common VLAN, or they'll nail up some sort of IP and IP tunnel, VPN, sort of GRE. Some of them use like VTUN sessions between Linux boxes in order to actually get that sort of next layer above. And they use things such as the NetFlow tools or Cisco rate limits in order to actually control how much traffic flows to a particular peer or from a particular peer in that case. There's a lot of layer 2 forwarding resale. In Australia, the way you actually access a lot of the DSL and a lot of the broadband offerings now from the wholesale carriers is via LNSs and layer 2 sessions, effectively. A lot of these guys flick around these sessions using layer 2 forwarding straight across Exchange Fabric. So we see a lot of that sort of activity and actually picking up those tail services. So instead of going to multiple wholesale carriers and picking up multiple tails, they can actually pick them up via the exchange point, and it's been a really, really interesting use of the peering fabric. Intra-city sort of high-speed, low-cost fabric. There's been a little bit of consolidation in the industry in Australia since we've started, not as much as just before we started. And as a result, a lot of businesses have merged or consolidated together, and they'll retain their peering link in probably two locations in the same city, and then use it either as backup or as just a straight transmission path between two locations. With the 10 gig metro rings that we deploy, it's really easy to do that. We don't really encourage it, and we try and move them onto a private VLAN because that sort of traffic shouldn't be on a shared fabric for a start, and the really tends to skew our peering statistics. As we like to think that what we're actually seeing on our peering ports is actually peering traffic. Access to Usenet feeds. We have Usenet servers in every place that we deploy. We also make those available to read access to our ISP's customers. That's interesting. We used to have a lot of Usenet servers until we sort of started moderating, I suppose, the type of groups that we'd carry, and more to the point, the size of the articles. And so they don't carry as much interesting, maybe copyright-protected content as they used to. As a result, the usage on those servers has gone down. I had another one in here which I've taken out, which was basically that ISPs being ISPs, they've got a habit one ISP stole another ISP's customers. We had one incident of Brisbane where they found it to be a really good high-speed DOS path. It didn't cost them much to teach that other ISP a lesson. We sort of jump on that stuff and stop it as soon as it happens as well, but it was sort of comical for an hour or so. The routers we use all Cisco IOS-based routers. It's hard to pass up. They're primary and secondary routers. All of our secondary routers are in actual diverse locations. So while we use the same platform in our secondary routing, they're at different physical locations. All of our locations are backed up with diverse rings as well, so we can lose a site and we still actually get transmission between the other sites. We use some Linux and Quagga/Zebra-based routing platforms on what we call our low-value content. So we have some sort of free content areas where people put Debian mirrors and other sort of file transfer areas like that. And it was just a really cute solution at a time. Those boxes with the appropriate size CPU can transfer a fair bit of traffic, and they've been kicking along ever since on reasonably inexpensive hardware. Our routing table size is about 4% of the global table. That's interesting because if we did the aggregation thing, I'm not too sure how big it'd be after that. A lot of our customers aren't the best at aggregating, and the presentation before was interesting in that respect. So look, we don't require CRS-1 routers or anything like that, and I often joke that I could actually do it on 2500 series routers, but if I did, my customers would walk away. So we use 7000 series routers. Our routing table is very stable. We haven't deployed any flap controls on it. Whether that's good practice or not, it's worked for us. We've recently deployed a multicast fabric, and using MGP and MDSP, we've been MSDP. We've set that up. Precisely zero ISPs have taken advantage of that at this point, which is a shame. We've put a certain system out there with respect to multicast at an exchange point, and we're waiting for people to tell us if it's good or bad. The switches, we first started using Cisco 3500 series switches, and we ran into a series of problems. They didn't have any 10 gig support, which was tough when we were sort of started bursting over a gig regularly in places. So we looked at replacing that. We also needed a lot better port control, and on the platform at the time, it just wasn't available. Spanning tree has always been an issue for us, especially customers sending it to us. We really hate that. Broadcast storm control, dual PSUs, hot swap, a whole bunch of other stuff. We end up going with the Foundry SuperX and then the smaller locations, the FESX platforms, and they've been really quite nice until yesterday in one location. That's another story. The spanning tree control is fantastic, and then the way that they do the 10 gig, and especially the port densities, to be blunt, for the price on that, it was at the time it was really, really hard to pass up. So we've got a lot of 10 gig capability in the network, a lot of bang for buck. Routing. The way we actually route is all customers have to actually enter routes into a central web-based managed system. From that, we actually burn access filters every day, 7:30 in the morning. And basically, if you don't tell us you've got it, we're not going to let you route it. It's about that simple. Each IX point has its own ASN. I don't know if APNIC like us for that, but we've got lots of AS numbers. We use IP space from APNIC under the IXP allocation rules. We monitor all the routes that our customers send to us, and it's a really great tool for actually working out if a customer rings up and says, I'm seeing some routing issues. We can look at the graph, see the dip or the rise in the number of routes, and you can really sort of jump on a problem quite fast, so that's fantastic. We don't mandate RADB or other IRR. Interesting, when I first started, I thought that'd be a good thing. I think I saw it in the links terms and conditions, and I might have borrowed it. The first few customers we brought on board basically recalled in horror and really didn't want to do it, so we then took it out, so we no longer require that, all based on customer feedback. Some other interesting experiences when all the TCP vulnerabilities became a real issue. Within a day or so, we actually implemented MD5 passwords via the web interface again, pushed out automatically to the routers, so we sort of tied down that hole there. We see a lot of really cool stuff that our customers send us. God bless them. We love our customers. A weekly or a daily incident is someone accidentally sending us default route. All these routes hit the filters. There's never any accidents there. We merely get to see in the syslog what's happened. Lots and lots of global tables. The amount of IGP that we see is at times truly staggering. A lot of RIP V1 from certain customers. And all parts of the RFC 1918 address space come along, not to mention, you know, everything from sort of slash 32s onwards and usually buckets of them. You know, when an ISP deaggregates into slash 32s that you're in trouble. Some suggestions to potential peers of some of the things we've seen, some things you really shouldn't do. There's some certain commands you really shouldn't turn on unless you know what you're doing. And IP verify, unicast reverse pass, one of them. It's of our major fault when turning up new peers when things don't seem to work properly. We ask them to take that command off and magic, it all works. So really, if you don't know what you're doing with that one, or you haven't got as much experience in routing as you should have, please turn it off. Symmetrical routing solves so many issues that we see. The BGP decision algorithm, really, you really shouldn't rely on it to actually, you know, make a commercial decision, because it makes really poor ones. It's got all sorts of knobs and dials, BGP, that you can use to get a good commercial outcome. By default, it's not the smartest in that respect. It's got no idea what your transit provider's charging you. Please turn off spanning tree. Please turn off spanning tree. ACLs and communities are good things. We actually brand via our web interface. You can actually tell us what location a route's originated from, and then we'll actually leach that out as a community in our announcements and actually brand that for you. That's good when an ISP peers in more than one location, and so people can make intelligent decisions based on where a route actually comes from if they're seeing it in more than one location. Common aggregation policies on your peering and transit, that's our biggest bugbear. We exist by seeing lots of traffic across our peering point. And when a provider sends us a slash 19 but busts that down into 32, did I get that right? Yeah, 32/24s to the rest of the world, then you just don't see as much traffic for some reason. And they'll ring up and say, yeah, but I'm prepending out to my transit provider. I've got four extra ASs in the path. I said, well, the smallest route always wins, so I'm sorry, guys, try it again. We had one fantastic customer bridge their management network, their secure management network, straight onto the IX VLAN. That was unfortunate. Turn your IGPs off, and please don't use spanning tree, because that's a... Not so much now with our new switches, because basically if our switches see your spanning tree BPDU, we'll just shut your port down. It's fantastic. But you still ring us up and get angry, so please don't do it. And look, thank you very much. That's time for me. If there's any questions, I'm more than happy to take them, and that's how we do peering at Pipe Networks.
We can only take one question at most. Any questions? If no, thank you, Stephen.
Disappointed. Thank you.
The next speaker is from JPNAP, Ishii-san. And please, the next speaker, Gareth Please be ready.
Hello, my name is Toshinori Ishii from JPNAP Internet Multifeed. I'd like to introduce our Layer 2 IX named JPNAP. First of all, this is my company's information. Internet Multifeed is one of the first internet data center company in Japan. And Multifeed started the Internet exchange service named JPNAP on January 2001. JPNAP is a commercial internet exchange service in Japan operated by Internet Multifeed. JPNAP provides several services. It's named JPNAP, JPNAP Osaka, and JPNAP 6. JPNAP provides you several special services. Those are link aggregation service and traffic engineering service named Peer Watcher that display BGP peer traffic graph and IRR server and NTP server. JPNAP is Ethernet-based distributed Layer 2 IX service. As I told, we have JPNAP service in Tokyo and JPNAP Osaka service in Osaka area. Both locations have two sites each, and they are interconnected, but Tokyo and Osaka are not connected. This is JPNAP history. We start several JPNAP services, JPNAP, JPNAP Osaka, JPNAP 6. And a recent topic is JPNAP provides peer watcher service and also provides IPv4 and V6 dual stacking optional service. I will talk these topics later. And the traffic volume of JPNAP is very huge. The peak traffic of JPNAP is reached to 105.6 gigabit per second peak. And JPNAP is one of the most largest IXs in the world. And we have about 80 ports and 40% users are already using 10 gig interface now. From June 2005, JPNAP provides traffic engineering service named Peer Watcher. This service gives you traffic graph of each BGP peers using S-Flow technology. And these each colors shows you each BGP peers traffic. I believe ISPs can get same data from their MAC accounting feature on their routers, but some ISPs operator works too busy and or some small ISPs do not have such function on their routers. So many ISPs people are using this service to check BGP peer traffic volume. JPNAP provides this service to 10 gigabit Ethernet and gigabit Ethernet customers for free of charge. And JPNAP also offer automatically backup system named optical switch. Optical switch detects IX switch's failure and automatically switch to standby IX switch by optical monitoring. JPNAP provides free backup IX ports for all users, include fast Ethernet users, but optical switch is suitable for optical fiber only, of course. And recently, JPNAP starts IPv4 v6 dual stack service. It's optional service and supports all users. It means 10 gig Ethernet, gigabit Ethernet, and fast Ethernet. This service uses same equipment with IPv4 IX, so you can use same service provided by IPv4 JPNAP network. JPNAP also have closed users meeting every 4 months. These are past topics. They are past topics, and we have social gathering after the meeting. And in conclusion, traffic volume is still rapidly increased, and JPNAP provides these advanced service, peer watcher and optical switch. And JPNAP starts IPv4 v6 dual stack service. Please visit our website. Thank you. Any questions?
Any question? Hi, Louis Lee, Equinix. I have one question. Are you able to count v4 and v6 traffic separately on the customer ports right now?
Now, not separated, but I'm creating such feature this spring, I think.
Okay. That means it will be available soon.
Yes.
Okay, thank you, Ishii-san.
Thank you.
Our next speaker is Gaurav. He is going to talk about NPIX updates, NPIX in Nepal. The next speaker will be from India, Nixie. Please be ready. Gaurav?
Yep, thanks. I'll be pretty quick. This is, I don't know how many times I've done this here. Okay. We had a couple of for those of you who haven't been to my previous NPIX presentations, we are a layer 2 exchange point in Kathmandu. Operate on a Cisco 3548 or 3550s, one of the switches. Two locations. One was the old primary old location in the telco facility. Now we've got our own facility, stuff like that. So in last year, we had three new companies joined. All of them came in with fiber optics, whatever. Two of our existing ISPs upgraded to their own fiber link at our primary venue, where they were with DSL and wireless connections before that. We also moved to a new building and installed a new rack, mainly because pulling that fiber to the in the place we were earlier, or it's like we just moved to adjacent building because the earlier building we had trouble pulling all the fiber and getting our own riser space and stuff like that. So we said that rather than trying to move it after a few years, we just do it now. And so all the new fiber is actually in the new building space. We did a training on BGP routing and multi-homing. So I'm almost glad to report that we no longer have any static routing in place. Finally, after 2 years of Internet Exchange Point, all the static routings have gone, but there is some problem yet. We've got a looking glass. You can see our routes at lg.pcs.net and all the peers and everyone. We also got a grant from the TU Foundation of Sweden to install the iRootservers.net. This was installed last week. I just installed it and then got on a plane to come here. I've been told that it's being tested and will get operational maybe sometime next week. The Autonomica people can tell more about it than I can. We've been working with the people from local university with me to create a routing archives of what we have at NPIX. Well, this is funny. I don't have a MRTC graph because I'm not able to access our new transit line for some reason from here. We do have MRTCs on the server there locally, but I can't get it to put it in my slide. But then when we have NetFlow, we are actually initiating a NetFlow project to, you know, because ISPs wanted to know what kind of traffic was going through. So we should be able to give a bit more flows. In aggregate, we see about 15 Mbps of traffic through NPIX in average, two switches, combining both the switches. That is actually almost 200% increase over the last 1 year, especially after the two big companies upgraded to fiber from wireless. We saw a huge increase in traffic almost overnight. There was a Nepali version of Linux that was developed and released last year, and that basically, you know, saw a huge amount of traffic because we had a local meter of the thing, and people were downloading this every day, and for almost a week, there was a sustained amount of high traffic, which made a lot of people happy, because for many people, it was the first time they downloaded the entire CDs from the internet in less than half an hour. Routing stats, we've started collecting these stats. We're currently seeing an aggregate of slightly more than a /17. So basically have a /17 plus a /19 and 5/24s. So there is a distribution there. We've got 3, 19, all sorts of things. We had this talk about aggregation, but we're still seeing at least two providers doing small, longer prefixes than /24s. Mainly because of satellite VSATs being used from the... Well, the way it works is they've got these POPs in other parts of Nepal, which is a VSAT, and those VSATs actually don't connect to anywhere in Kathmandu. So if those prefixes are announced in Kathmandu, they're basically going, you know, four-way loop in some cases. So they don't announce those couple of /25s around in Kathmandu. And one guy has a /128, so special cases. Okay, this is roughly a 25% increase from the previous IP count. This in 6 months period, I think we just had a new /19 and a couple of new members. So in last year, in year 2005, we basically the number of routes grew by 25 to 30%. I explained about the non-aggregates. All members are now using BGP, no more static routes. And as I said, we still have one member who is using a private ASN, but that should be temporary because they applied for APNIC membership and it took a bit for them to get it processed. So we started with private ASN, and I'm told that by now they've got their own AS number from APNIC and should be over. And this is also a new policy. We said that for a while we are not accepting connections unless people came with an AS number, but at the last members meeting, other members suggested that, okay, let's do a 3 months grace and they can come and get used to, you know, using BGP and running their network. And also the other thing is we don't charge for people for 3 months after the first connect. So the first 3 months are trial period with private ASNs, and we don't guarantee that everybody would peer with the private ASN. We've got our own LAN now. This is probably a major thing. We've got our transit LAN. We've got our own ASN, own space. We're getting transit and all that. The reason we had to do this was our NetFlow projects and MRTG was getting flakier because that was hosted somewhere else in one of the ISPs and kept on getting into problems. And also one of the necessities was we had to provide transit to some of the services we host at the exchange point. And instead of asking for transit every few months with a different ISP, we said that we'll just go and get our own AS transit and put it together. So we got the root server, we got some DNS Anycast servers, AS112 and stuff like that. We'll soon get an NTP time server. This is the target for next 6 months. We'll move the MRTG to a better machine, recreate all of it, good and NetFlow on a machine connected to the switch. So almost everything is done, should get operational soon. We also create an archive of the routing table, and then a big current agenda. We will not start anything new before we finish all of this. So in the last meeting, there was something about, you know, our out of the two locations, one location is at a telco building, and access to that is very, very restricted. So the new members are not there in the second location. So some of them were actually saying that, can we get a second location? The story behind this is, though we have people coming with fiber, this is all overhead fiber. It's not dug on the ground or something. And the chances of vandalism and things like that happening is relatively higher compared to some other countries. So it's actually cheaper for the ISPs to propose a second site than, you know, constantly upgrading one site or putting all the eggs in one basket. So though the traffic volume is small, because all the international bandwidth goes through satellite, it's pretty expensive. We're talking about like $2,000 per meg, one way, non-synchronized, so it's $4,000 per meg. So even one meg traffic is pretty significant. So ISPs are happy to, you know, put more resources or more money into doing that. The website and everything with doing that. So if you want to visit us, we have two general meetings a year. It's sort of getting developed into a Nepalese ISP forum where we drink and have fun. So you're welcome to come. Thank you. Questions?
Any question?
Thank you.
No, we do. Thanks, Gary. Our next speaker is Puneet from India. He will talk about NEXI. The speaker after NEXI is Akito from Equinix. Please be ready.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is NEXI's strategy between 2005 to 2010. This is unstoppable convergence technologies which enable the seamless delivery of information, communication, and entertainment content is already on in India, thanks to the rapid push by the government since 1999, especially after national telecom policy announced by the government. Next,
I'll make it a bit smaller.
Yeah, next, please.
Next.
Yeah, there are four revolutions underway in India. 882 million people between the age of 24 to 64 by 2020. Rural and semi-rural initiative underway, such as setup of 100,000 computer service center. E-Chopal is an initiative taken by a corporate called ITC, and 14 statewide area networks. Any job anywhere that can be sent out through a telephone line is set up for grab by this very large potential working population of India. Open source, like a global plan for free OS and application. Some vendors have also come out with some low-cost PCs, which are gaining popularity. And all current broadband plans are target, of course, are unambitious, presenting a loss to the Indian historical opportunity. We need to converge, approach together. Next. It's critically important to invest in the world-class NEXI infrastructure so that connectivity and content service provider can enable a seamless exchange of content and data traffic so that the India base and the user population can improve their experience of the internet at the low cost effective price. Right now, all the NICSI NOCs are situated in the STPI premises, which is the soft-rail technology parts of India, Government of India body. And according to information economy report by UNCAD, government should establish a competitive milieu for ISPs. Particular attention should be paid to ISPs domestic interconnection. This is a serious concern for ISPs. Next, please. This is a NICSI vision. NICSI is a neutral peering and security monitoring point for the ISPs. And India government to ensure that internet traffic originating and destination for India should be remained in India. This is the main vision. And the mission is to develop and roll out world-class backend infrastructure for all ISPs in India, which would deliver non-discriminatory, efficient security compliance and cost-effective quality of service. Yeah, NICSI value and culture. Benchmark to the world-class standard for providing services which honor public-private partnership spirit, like NICSI, transparency, non-competing, independent actions, inclusiveness and unity in diversity, equitable treatment, process, value, and customer focus. Okay. NICSI right now have two projects. Beside the internet exchange, NICSI have been given a task to offer .in domain name. NICSI has already registered 156,000 domain name and rather 166,000 domain name. It's a slightly old figure. And NICSI has appointed 35 registrars so far, plus two registrars to look after the government sector and body, that is ERNet and NIC. And to resolve the dispute, especially IPR issues amongst companies, NICSI has appointed 11 arbitrators to resolve these issues. Next, please. Sorry. Can you just go back? Just update on internet exchange. Back one. Yeah. Internet exchange NICSI has got 51 connection in 4 NICSI NOC. NICSI is operating in the 4 metros, Delhi, Mumbai, Calcutta, and Chennai. And 25 major ISPs have already joined in 4 place. Mumbai, somehow it is not there. Mumbai traffic flow at Mumbai is the maximum, which is 500 MB. And next come to Delhi, it's 100 MB. And Chennai is third with 85 MB, and Calcutta is yet to gain, is just 0.5 MB. Yeah, next one. Okay, this is a roadmap for NICSI. NICSI has been started with by Mr. Amitabh Singhal, who is also has been associated with SPI for more than 10 years, and established and run in 2005. Then there are some roadmap, clarity, vision, mission, etc., which I already talked about. And this Sanjay Devedi has taken over NICSI from November onwards. He's a president ISPI. He's also an acting CEO of NICSI, as well as he's a director of NICSI. Next, please. Okay. This is another benchmark. Especially ISPs as well as SPI, is demanding the Department of IT to upgrade the STPI infrastructure where the NICSI NOC are located so that we can give ISPs a world-class service. Right now, we have major ISPs like BSNL, state-owned company, VSNL incumbent, Bharti, one of the largest private operators, integrated operators and Reliance as well, GAIL Gas Authority of India Limited, and Power Grid Corporation, and Railtel. They all are the major ISPs as well, I would say. Yeah, next. These are the other KRA, actually. When Sanjay became a CEO of the NICSI, he prepared a KRA for his for his, even NICSI and his own consumption, so what he would like to do in NICSI. So these are the details of the NICSI. Even there is a suggestion, if required, NICSI can. NICSI right now is a non-profit body set up under the Indian Companies Act 1950, and there was a proposal that NICSI can become a profitable party if everybody desires so. Yeah, next, please. Yeah, thanks. Any questions?
Any questions?
Can you give us a participant breakdown on Foresight?
Oops, sorry. Instead of just 51 participants for the four sites, could you say how many participants at each site, or even just roughly?
We have a maximum ISPs in Mumbai, it would be around 18-19. But I would say every major ISPs are already connected with all the, especially three NICSI NOCs. Actually, right now we have only NICSI NOC in the four metros only. And out of the four metros, three are the major one, like Mumbai, where most of the data center are there, and then Delhi, and then Chennai. We have a cable landing station apart from Mumbai, so that is why Chennai is scaling up. After some time, we are expecting like Chennai will be have a more traffic as well as more ISP will come and join.
So 19 in Mumbai, do you know offhand for Delhi, Chennai, or?
19 Mumbai and 18-19 is also there in Delhi. And Chennai, we have around 11 in Chennai. All the information are there in the NICSI website, just nixi.in. You will find all the latest information along with the members' details, etc. Any question?
Any more question? If no, thank you, Puneet.
Thanks. Thank you.
Our next speaker is Akito from Equinix. He'll talk about Equinix Exchange update in Sydney. The speaker after next is Takabayashi-san from JPIX. Please be ready. As a reminder for the speakers, please give all your slides to us, and then we can put them all on the website.
Okay.
Okay, maybe JPIX can do the presentation first.
Backups and backups.
Is it the same presentation?
Yeah.
Sorry. My name is Akito Kuroka from Equinix, and we provide colocation exchange services in the U.S. and the Asia-Pacific region. And today, I'm just going to give a very general update on our Sydney exchange and some of the initiatives that we'll be launching this year. Equinix exchange in Sydney started in 2003. We had about 3 participants initially. Now we have about 18 participants. And participants include domestic and international carriers, ISPs, and content providers. And fortunately, we had some large international content providers join our platform recently. We also provide co-location services, 24/7 monitoring. And the connections that we provide right now are fast Ethernet. We provide both MLPA and BLPA peering. And depending on if the customer requests it, we'll carve out a separate VLAN for a certain BLPA request. And we're a neutral IX, and we also provide some form of proxy peering for people who don't have an AS, so we assign private AS and it works. And as for the traffic trend, we've seen some steady growth, and we have about 120 megs of traffic now on the average, and we've had some pronounced peaks in the past several months. And the topology that we use is pretty straightforward. We use Cisco's and Foundry's, and we have a route arbiter, route server running the Quagga routing suite. And we also have a portal that we provide to the customers that allows you to see utilization statistics as well as some of the co-location environments, and also an integrated ticketing system. The initiative that I want to talk about today is the Equinix Exchange Extension, and it's the extension of the exchange platform to the second and third largest population centers in Australia, which is Melbourne and Brisbane. And the 3 sites will be connected by Ethernet backhaul provided by NextGen Networks. The 3 sites that will be connected are the Equinix Sydney IBX and the Brisbane Metronode Data Center and the Melbourne Metronode Data Center. And the primary benefits of this extension is that it enables interstate peering via MLPA. It allows peers in each site to access peers in all 3 sites. We do have intra-site BLPA available, and it basically allows for the usual case for peering is that you get to reach a larger number of users, which is about probably over 80 ISPs and content providers across the 3 states. And we're planning to launch this in March. As for the topology, we have leaf nodes going to Brisbane and Melbourne, which are L2 switches that terminate to L3 switches in Sydney, which proxies route server routes to each of the different sites. We don't allow BLPA across the different states, so it will be mainly MLPA. And I think we'll probably be for resiliency. We'll probably be adding more elements into this, especially the backhaul portion in the future. But right now, this is how we're going to start up this exchange that's distributed across states. Any questions?
Any question?
How large are the intercapital links?
It's actually a gigi pipe, but it's shaped.
To what?
100 megs, yeah. And so we don't really have any scaling concerns, as you can see by the traffic we're generating right now, but we'll probably be able to provision on the fly.
Steve Baxter, Pipe Networks. What's the tariff for the extended peering?
The tariff for the it will be the same as if you were to buy a port in Sydney. Is that
so?
No, it's not. Oh, sorry. Donovan, is that? Can you go up in there?
Steve, the exact pricing has been working out at the moment, but basically it will be more. Basically because the benefit you're getting by joining in Melbourne and or Brisbane, you're seeing that benefit immediately of access to Sydney's.
Do we know how much
traffic?
More?
No, not at this stage, no.
It's almost March. Oh, it is March.
It is March, yeah.
Any more questions?
Any other questions?
Even though, thank you, Akito. Microphone?
Do you have some system in place to eliminate connections to between ISPs in Brisbane and Melbourne abusing the wide area network, which happened to the prior Australian exchange that did this?
Sorry, can you...
So in the prior Australian exchange to support Sydney, Melbourne and Brisbane, it was a significant issue of abuse of wide area network between Melbourne and Brisbane.
Uh-huh.
So do you have a system in place to prevent this?
So right now we're not going to extend the L2 VLAN across the state.
I guess what happened in the prior exchange network was GRE tunnels between providers to abuse this wide area network.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not sure of...
Yeah, we don't have something systematic in place yet, but we'll definitely consider that in the future.
Okay. What's your definition of abuse? Because, I mean, clearly the purpose of this is to be used.
Yeah. But the reality is the bandwidth they're buying is almost as expensive as transit in this country.
So
therefore, it won't last forever.
Please use microphone, please.
Definition of abuse is where related companies would peer in Brisbane and Melbourne and then set up a GRE tunnel between the two, and this would cause, at the time, a megabit, which was at that time thousands of dollars a month worth of transit, to be trunked between Sydney, or between Melbourne and Brisbane, as an example.
Right. It's not just me. I mean, I've obviously got an agenda here, but it's a valid point.
Mm-hmm.
The example that David's talking about was the old Osbo network, and one of the things that led to it going away was its transmission network. And I'm just wondering if that's been taken into account and history's been looked at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely something that we're concerned about, then, and we would try to implement a system that would effectively eliminate those concerns.
Okay. Thank you, Akito.
Okay. Thank you.
Next speaker is Takabayashi-san from JPIX. The speaker after next is Curtis from NetNoc. Please be ready.
Good afternoon. My name is Takejiro Takabayashi, and I'm representing JPX today. And I was IXSIG on APNIC 19 Kyoto, and it's update from APNIC 19. Start from history of JPIX. There was a IX NSBX B2 in Japan. And there were actually we were commercial IX, and there was a need for the commercial IX because there is only one IX named it's a academic IX named NSBX B2, and then we became the couple major ISPs in Japan get together and made a joint venture. And we started out as a commercial with 24 hours support, and we have those colocation service and offering cable service within the KDDI Otemachi building, where the, I think the most of the traffics are in Japan. Okay, and the services we are offering is that we're offering the ports. We're pure layer 2 IX and 10 gig port, giga Ethernet port, fast Ethernet, and we started at the link aggregation, and we don't have any 10 gig aggregation people, but we does have the link aggregation. And service type, remote access, because we're distributed, but there's still not all the customers, the ISPs, have access to our switch data center where our switch is located. So we accepting those ISPs router connection by remotely. It could be dark fiber, it could be Ethernet, or it could be ATM, but ATM is almost gone. And colocation service, it's a rack. We offering rack service with eyes and hand service, and it's duplicating in-house cabling too. And we have a standalone IPv6 IX service. It says service, but it's only experimental. And we have started this on January 2002, and it's free if you have IPv4 port with us. And there's only fast Ethernet for this service, and traffic's not that much. And we have 16 ISPs are connected to this switch. And optional service is a value added, and it's almost like Mr. Ishii was saying, it's almost same as JP9 Pass. And we have one difference is, I guess, the MLPA with route server exchanging service, which just reflects the prefixes that connects to our route servers. And also we have another type of the route server which makes you, which gives you the, not statistics, but you can confirm your prefixes which you're announcing is matches IRR or not. We have RIPE and RADV replicated. And so you can, once you can make peer with this route server, you can check your prefixes. And we also have NTP server and NTP server, and this traffic statistics graph is just a SNMP counters graph. And new features we are presenting is the traffic analysis tool, which uses the SLOW, and it's similar to peer watcher of the JPNAPS, which they our services traffic viewer, and that looks something like this, and looks totally similar to JPNAPS. Okay. And we have been distributed, expanded to some of the site because of we could go out and get, since we were only located at Otemachi building, many customers had to have dedicated line or expensive lines to get into the JPIX. So what we did was to get distributed, and like it says over here, we have 5 sites right now, and 2 at Nagoya and Osaka. And As you can see, JPIX Osaka is standalone, and other other sites are connected each other, and a couple sites are link aggregated with 10 gigis, and a couple are aggregated with gigabit ports. And we use dark fibers connection. And basically, network configuration is just like star, cascaded. And we don't use any STPs or anything. Just cold standby. I mean, not cold standby, but hot cold standby, you say. Power is always on, but the cable is not connected. And this is how it works, how it looks. This is a simple diagram of the remote access. And we used to use those, I don't know what generation they are, but which doesn't carry 10 gigi traffic, I mean 10 gigi port. And we start using the, well, I think, on it says September 2003, we start using those 10 gig, I mean, we start offering the 10 gig port with 410 switches, and it's running fine, I guess. Not too much problem. We're seeing some, but. And here's our traffic volume right now. It's on the metropolitan area in Nagoya. It's in and out, and 64 gig right now, as of February 20th, sorry. And we have number of customers of around 110, and port ratio says that most of the customers are gigis, but around 10% are 10 gigs. Actually, we have 17 10 gig customers, so port density of the switch is really, we need a lot of port density, actually. And that's about it. Any questions?
Any question?
Yeah. Steve Baxter from Pipe again. Would there be any traffic in common with the JPNAP presentation before? They had their bandwidth graph and your bandwidth graph. I mean, is there any commonality in there, or are there common peers that would be amongst those bandwidth numbers?
You mean this
that
line?
One there. Yeah, it's probably a co-question for the other chap from JPNAP as well. But, I mean, is there much commonality in your customers to their customers?
I guess so.
Yeah, oh, okay. Yeah.
It's just growing and growing.
No, I realise that. I was just wondering the effect of, you know, of only one, for example. So.
Mike Hughes, Lynx. One thing that's interesting is both you and JPNAP with your S-Flow tools. What's the back-end database you're using with that? Is it just RRD or something else?
For S-Flow, you mean?
Yeah.
The SQLs.
You're using SQL. Because we've been working on that, and one thing we found was we were being constrained by disk I.O. quite badly. Our network, something like 15, 16 switches and a lot of traffic. What sample rate are you using on the switches?
Actually, Fullstand has doing very good job.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, back off. Okay, we're using, I forget the number, but 16-something-something. Something. It's mm-hmm. It's doubles, right?
Mm-hmm. It's doubles. Every time it's doubles, right.
And I don't get the exact number, but if it increases the sampling rate, I mean, this sampling rate can't handle the sampling rate, mm-hmm. it just often back off.
So it's not a static sampling rate, it's a variable sampling rate.
Right now, it's not. But okay. Actually, our software can figure out, it's not actually, it's just only a samples.
Yeah.
So actually, we don't really matter, actually.
Okay, the last question, sorry.
Sorry, it's a quick statement. I thought I'd get my plug in for EuroAX. There's 28 ASNs that appear at JPIX and JPNAP. If you're wondering about if you go to the EuroAX website, you can see these sort of details.
Yeah. Yes.
Thank you, sir. We joined EuroIX on February. So.
Okay. Thank you, Takayashi-san. Thank you. Next speaker is Curtis from NetNot. The speaker after this is Kara from M6.
Both screens are black. Okay. Oh, okay. I'm Curtis Lindqvist. I'm from NetNode, exchange mode operator in Sweden. Short history of who we are and why we are. We sprung out of one of the oldest exchange points in Europe called DGX, that's located at the Royal Institute of Technology. NetNode was formed as a separate company in 1996, in December 1996. So this year will actually be the 10-year anniversary. Reason for creating NetNode was basically because there was a need or there was a desire to have a independent and a resilient exchange point infrastructure, and to have some form of national view on the exchange of traffic. And the reason for this was around the time that NetNode was created, there was a government report on the future of internet in Sweden, and the importance of internet for national infrastructure security. So the design and creation of NetNode was heavily influenced by this, and a lot of the design choices and the way that NetNode is constructed and set up is to handle traffic change between the operators, even in times of national emergency. It was also decided that Stockholm, the capital of Sweden, would not be the focus point, that even if we lost Stockholm completely, we would actually still be able to exchange traffic, and we would have enough capacity to exchange traffic. The latter is probably true for us, but it's probably not true for the carriers connecting to us, but that's kind of not our problem. So at the time of creation, search for suitable locations started. Turned out to be a lot more complex back then than we had thought it was. The original criteria for doing this split with the number of exchange points in Sweden was that the cities needed to have some sort of noticeable population and the traffic volume. And by Asian numbers, I guess that none of the cities in Stockholm have any population numbers. But by Swedish standards, we managed to find at least a few cities. There had to be some easy way to get carrier, basically transport capacity into those cities. That turned out to be one of the hardest criteria to meet, because although we had a deregulated phone market or deregulated telco market, that doesn't necessarily mean that capacity goes into the ground by itself, though, especially not in 1996. The last criteria was that the exchange points were fairly spread out across the city, or across the country, sorry, so that we could make some use of localizing traffic flows. I'll get back to that later. And the last criteria was that the Swedish government had early on just built a number of telecommunication bunkers. These are constructs 40 meters below ground, built by basically military expertise. They are for civilian use, though, and they're also used for the voice interconnects. And these bunkers are actually heavily subsidized. And again, it's based on the principle of national infrastructure. So we asked permission. It's not a co-location you can just show up in. You have to be deemed critical. Whatever goes in there has to be considered national critical infrastructure, which basically means the actual voice exchanges. It means us, and it means basically the subscriber databases for the mobile operators is generally the stuff that goes into these bunkers. This is a map of Sweden. Today we operate in 5 cities. The northernmost is the newest one, and that is also the only one that is not located in one of these bunkers. All the others are. We can save the geography lesson. What you did see on the map there was that these were actually fairly evenly spread out across the country, and the original idea was, as I said again, to try to localize traffic. Sweden is a fairly long country by European standards, and we wanted to keep the response times down so that user would have a more effective exchange of traffic and lower latency. In the beginning, this turned out to be quite hard, because although most providers were, when we had 2 locations, which was Stockholm and Gothenburg, and we had providers connected to both cities, all the traffic still was exchanged in Stockholm. People often ask me why, and I wish I knew the answer. I don't. This slowly improved, though, and today we will see the traffic is exchanged locally, and we see the largest growth we see is actually in the local exchanges, both in terms of connected providers and in terms of volume. Stockholm is still the largest in terms of absolute numbers, but the growth clearly happens outside Stockholm. And the reason is that the uptake of broadband connections is so large that people don't want to backhaul the other provider's traffic from one city to the other. They rather dump it locally and do hot potato routing. And it's also noticeable that we're getting better and better performance. I would guess, and I don't think you can get any provider in Sweden to agree with me, but I'm guessing that 80% of the traffic is peer-to-peer. They would claim it's much less, especially if the recording industry is listening. But it's most likely also a benefit of this peer-to-peer traffic, because peer-to-peer traffic will pick the shortest path with the lowest response times. Something about the connecting to us. Due to the construction with these bunkers, these are actually at undisclosed locations, so it's kind of hard to pull fiber in there unless you know where they are. In Stockholm, we actually won't ever tell you the address of the bunkers. Instead, when you pay the connection fee to Stockholm, we will get you the fibers from your colo provider, your regular Telecity or whoever it might be. We will actually include in the prices fibers from there to the two bunkers in Stockholm. As most international providers in Sweden are only present in Stockholm, we actually increase the resilience by having two independent switches in Sweden, in Stockholm. So when you connect to us, you will have but one fiber pair from your location to each of those bunkers. The switches in the bunkers are not connected, and that is for a reason. Again, this is built for resilience. We don't want spanning tree traffic on one switch to take out the entire network. That's the entire idea. Right, Mike? Going around saying this, you know, at Eurex, I often get when I do this at EIX, there's always someone who says, "Oh God, I wish I didn't have to do spanning tree." Anyway, we have this idea that each of the bunkers is actually a single chassis, so there is absolutely no problem. We really want to keep this as simple as we possibly can. And again, we do this basically for resilience. We happen to be the switch vendor's most boring customer. If the switch vendors can support two VLANs, jumbo frames, and actually forward packets between the ports, we're kind of happy. That's a challenge for most of them anyway. So, in the other cities, the fiber situation is a bit more complex. We will actually tell the fiber providers the addresses unless they actually know it, and we will help the ISPs find a fiber provider. The last important point, just like the switches in Stockholm are not interconnected, neither are the actual cities. They're completely independent of each other. The entrance to one of these bunkers looks like this. It's a bunker. This is actually below sea level. This is actually underwater, by the way. Anyway, besides running the exchange point, what we also do is it was decided at the time of creation that we would run some critical common infrastructure for the good of the internet in general and for the good of the Swedish internet maybe in particular. Some of the services we do is that we actually provide official Swedish time. This is time that is actually traceable to UTC, which if your interest happens to be time, is actually quite unique. And it's actually a requirement for telco networks is that all time on synchronization that goes in is traceable to UTC. So when all your transmission networks just run out of the GPS clock, you're not following the standards. And you're probably quite vulnerable for attacks, by the way. So in all of these 304 cities, we actually provide this time. We also run the iRoute server that Gaurav was talking about. We have around 30 Anycasted locations, copies of iRoute servers. Which site in Stockholm, in Sweden, we actually currently operate it from doesn't really matter. It says that we won't disclose this, but looking at your route announcements is kind of obvious anyway, I guess. But in theory, you can actually operate this from any location. We also run the sc.tld services unicast, and as of a few days, we actually do that anycast as well. We host a number of TLDs equipment in Stockholm. VeriSign's CommonNet is one of them. We run Germany and whatever. There's quite a few of them. And we have there is somebody. We actually run some localized services. There is a bandwidth measurement tool for end consumer customers provided by the government in Sweden, where end users can download this tool and they can measure the available bandwidth between them and us. And the idea is that the bandwidth, there used to be broadband providers who claimed the customers got, let's say, 2 meg connections. And, well, they probably had 2 meg between their DSL modem and the DSLAN. And from there, they probably had 512K or something else. That's clearly visible with this tool, and it has actually given the operators at least somewhat of an incentive to actually provide what they're selling. What's happening there, the latest development actually happened today, is that we're actually putting up each of these measurement services in each of these cities. Today is only available in Stockholm, but we're doing this in all cities. Number of customers, well, most in Stockholm, 36. And downwards, mix of Swedish and international operators. Maximum aggregated bandwidth. So this is the peak load in 5 minute samples. It's not average sampling rate. The peak load over daytime looks pretty much the same. So we're doing some 40 gig of traffic, peak 5 minute intervals. This is for all the five cities. For Stockholm only. Thank you, Serge. Which is the maximum, say, it's around, 27.5 gig. And the rest is then kind of equally distributed between the other three, between Stockholm, Gothenburg, and Malmö. And there's very, very little traffic in the north. That's it. Questions? Anyone actually managed to follow me?
What's the price of the fiber connection into the net node?
Well, in Stockholm, it's included in the exchange point price. So the price you pay us includes the fibers.
What would that be then?
So the way that we have to pay the fibers depends on if it's what's called the downtown part of the city, which is 290,000 kronas, which is roughly divided by 5 to get Australian dollars, whatever 290,000 divided by 5 is. In the other part of the city, it's 340,000 kronas.
Is it per month?
Per year.
Per year.
That's per year. You pay annually. Sorry. No, divided by 5.
Next question.
Was there another
question? Yeah. Louis Lee. How well protected are the fiber pairs outside the bunker?
So, well, in the case where the providers actually order the fiber, we can't influence. It's only in Stockholm with 2 switches. Outside, in the other cities, it's only 1 switch, right? In Stockholm, we actually make sure that the fibers are redundantly routed. That said, though, it's pretty obvious that the bunkers will probably outlast the actual carriers and probably the end users by far in case of real trouble. But yeah, we do go through some length of making sure that the fibers are actually redundantly routed. That's the deal we have with the fiber company. Bill.
The fiber price you quoted, was that for...
No, that was the connection price, the net node, not the fiber price.
Okay, and that includes the one port or both ports?
Both ports, both fibers. All right, thank
you.
Okay,
thank you, Curtis. The next speaker is Kara from Amsic. Our last speaker will be Akai Sang from BBIX. Please be ready. Kara?
Okay. My name is Kara Malsini. I'm from the Amsterdam Internet Exchange. There it is. Since we're doing the update for the first time here, I included some background information, that is, if it will follow. Yeah, there it is. AMSIX is a not-for-profit association that was founded in the, well, somewhere in the beginning of the 90s. We are independent and neutral, and it was an association was formed in 1997. The exchange started a little bit earlier, and when it got larger and larger, it was decided to actually form a company that is run, that is actually owned by the by the association for 100%. As a whole, that means that the individual members are all equal and have the 100% of the shares as a whole. So no individual shares there. At the moment, we have about 240 plus members, most of which are ISPs, content providers, hosting providers, carriers, well, everything you could think of. But also a number of mobile telecom providers, because we also host the GRX, which is the GPRS roaming exchange. So port and member statistics are... I should stay here. It's not following the... Okay, page down. Okay, good. Port and member statistics, thanks. I actually included last year's at the right meeting. We always do this. We do this like half a year, so that would be taking a half year's update. You can see that we've grown with quite a bit in the last year, although it's not much different than previous years. Normally, the member growth and actual port growth is linear. So since the beginning of the exchange, there's been a linear growth of members and ports. The traffic, though, grows exponentially, doubling about every 10 months. I'll get into that later. At the moment, we've got, well, in January, we had just under, just over 350 ports. The most of which were GigE ports. But we launched in 2004, we launched the 10 gig service, and we actually had a lot of requests for those last year, up to the fact where it became a little bit problematic at times. We've also seen a lot of in link aggregation. And the FASTI and Ethernet ports also grow still a little bit due to the fact that we have that GRX running. So those are mostly mobile service providers connecting to the GRX VLAN. Okay, how does the topology look? Does it operate that way? Yeah. We have two core switches. Those are Foundry RX16s. We implemented those at the end of 2005. And we needed them badly at that time to be able to support the 10 gig growth, port growth. And we connect MG8s, all Foundry. We're a Foundry shop. The MG8s are actually for the 10 gig access of the members. And we have 7 edge switches at 4 locations. Those are scattered throughout Amsterdam over 4 co-locations that we have. 2 of those are like the original co-locations we started out with, who have a more academic-type profile, and we have 2 commercial co-locations or data centers. You can see that there is a blue and a red hub-spoke situation. Either one of the sides is active at one time. So it's either this core switch that is active or it is the other core switch that is active. And the way we do that is we use photonic switches where we connect 10 gig members, and those connect to an MG8, which is connected to the core switch. and we run VSRP to switch from one core to the other if there is something that we should, whether we should do maintenance or something should be swapped, or so it's an automatic failover from one to the other. Traffic and volume statistics. If you look at the daily profile, we actually do about 135 gigabits per second. That's the peak traffic, peak public exchange traffic. It's a 5-minute average. And at nights, we're just under 60 gigs of traffic. Looking at volume, the volume that we do grew quite a lot in the last year, from 12 petabytes a month to 29 petabytes a month. And we did a couple of days of 1 petabyte a day in the last month for the first time. I've got some member survey results that I wanted to share with you. We did a member survey in the last at the end of 2005. I've been told that people would be interested in hearing about that. We asked the new members why they joined up with M6, and most of them chose the number of routes that I can get at the exchange, whereas the existing members actually said, I keep being connected because I realize so much savings that there's no reason to disconnect. The performance of the network operating team, so that's basically response to requests, maintenance updates, things like that, keeping the exchange stable and alive, I guess, rated 8.4. And most of the platform parameters that we also report on a monthly basis, like packet loss and delay and jitter, score good to outstanding. And how we report on that and how we actually make this available on the website is we use the RIPE-NCC TTM project. So basically that measures traffic and parameters between the switches. The one thing that we didn't score very well on, even so, it was just adequate, is reporting. So we could work on that. We will. Something else that we asked people that responded to the survey is how is your, what is the establishment of peering sessions? Do you have any problems with that? Or is it a good experience that you have? And most parties are having a good experience with setting up the peerings at M6. They can find the peering information. It's all available online, but it's sometimes difficult to actually find. So that is a good score. In terms of the peering policies that are used at M6, most of the parties actually have a open peering policy, which is kind of standard at M6. You have either an open or a semi-open, although obviously there is a large group of carriers that has a restrictive or even more or less closed policy. But 87% chose that they have an open or semi-open policy. About 64% of the participants peer with more than 100 unique ASs. And they are connected to 4-plus exchanges. I excluded the ones that chose for a 10-plus connected exchange, so that the big guys are excluded there. But most of the networks are connected to average 4 exchanges, whereas the ones that were mentioned were D6, Lynx, and LIX, which is the second largest Dutch exchange, and Equinix. And a lot of others were mentioned, but those were the ones that were most mentioned. So development, the 10 gig take-up seems... 2 minutes? I'm almost finished anyway. The 10 gig take-up is continuously high, so we're working on platform development, and we're pushing the MGH to the edge. We're replacing those MGH with RX16s. So we keep being challenged by the members in extending and upgrading the platform. M6 didn't have a route server for a long time, and people were asking us to actually set up a route server. So we did, although it's not being used that much yet, that is. You can imagine that having a route server would serve the smaller members a lot in keeping their CPU load lower. And it also serves the larger members because they get a lot of requests from the smaller members. And they don't want to set up like a million sessions, so they rather pair with the route server for that. We launched the support of CWDM GE interfaces. There's a lot of developments on voice over IP and enum and SIP support, value-added services that were looking into what should be the position of the exchange, should we do anything with it, or should we keep clear of that. Same goes for streaming and DRM support. It's all value-added services that we may or may not go into ourselves, and if we do, we'd outsource that. Any questions?
Any question? Okay. If no, thanks, Kara.
Good.
Our next speaker and our last speaker is Akai Sang from BBIX. It's a relatively new IX in Japan.
Hello, my name is Masaru Akai from BBIX. There is four major layer 2 IX in Japan, excluded foreign company, JPIX, JPNAP, and the NSPIX project, and BBIX. We are newest IX in four major IXs. This is first time to introduce BBIX. I will talk about the operation and services. BBIX is carrier-free IX, and BBIX is decentralized, arranged in Japan. Why decentralized? So when the delay is generated, cannot use all of bandwidths, and the Japanese government has a regulation of IP phone, the delay becomes an important factor. Major ISP is concentrated in Tokyo, and local ISP also contract housing in Tokyo or buy IP or L2 line to Tokyo. If local ISPs are same district, local ISPs exchange traffic using IX in Tokyo or Osaka. Our solution, traffic in the region, exchange in the region. We think excessive concentration to Tokyo to have to avoid it against delay, quality, earthquake, and terrorism. BBIX Tokyo has two bases, and you can also connect BBIX through Equinix IBX. Customers congregating within the Equinix Tokyo IBX will be able to acquire BBIX's IX Connect services through the Equinix Exchange Service. BBIX guaranteed unconditional pairing with BB technology S176-76, meaning BBIX will provide environment to directly exchange traffic with about 5 million broadband users in Japan. And we provide link aggregate service, even if there is no room that prepared the equipment of 10 gigabit. Traffic can be exchanged by use link aggregates 1 gigabit interfaces. This is first time to open traffic graph. This is Tokyo, about 5 or 6 gigabit. And this is Osaka, about 100 megabit. And this is Fukuoka, over 1 gigabit. And Nagoya is about 400 megabit. This is location list. Tokyo is 2 point and Equinix, and Osaka, Nagoya, Sendai, and Fukuoka. Do you have any questions?
Any questions for Kai-san? If no, thank you, Kai-san.
Thank you.
Okay, I want to mention two more things about tonight's closing event. It will be it will start at about 7 p.m. tonight and will be held in the ballroom foyer upstairs. And also for the informal APNIC 21 informal closing dinner tomorrow, people who completed tickets payment, please come to collect your ticket from help desk today and tomorrow. Okay, thanks to all the speakers. One final reminder, please hand in your slides to us so that we can put them on our website. That's it for this session. Thank you, everyone.